May it please the court. My name is James Bailey. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner below, Mr. Stanish, who I may refer to occasionally as husband. With me at council table is Mr. Jason Cook, my colleague who has assisted in the preparation of the briefs. At its core, this case really involves three fundamental issues that we're tendering to the court. We submit that at its core, the amended order, that's the CRCP 60 sub A order, represents an abuse of the trial court's discretion, really for three reasons. First, the division of assets as expressed by the district court in that order, candidly isn't fair. One is it reflects a change from the court's original orders, and two, there's a gross disparity in the division of the assets in this case. That disparity is sufficiently great that it effectively impoverishes husband.
Let me ask you a question. The jurisdiction of this court over the original order was resolved, as I understand it, before the motions division,
I believe,
which said that the only argument we would hear would be on the 60A order. And it seems to me that what you've done is you've tried to bring forward the arguments on the underlying property division, and you're not really appealing what happened in the 60A order. The only thing I understand of significance that happened in the 60A order is that your client was awarded the tax funds, the tax carry forwards or whatever, that were some $40,000. All the rest of the case is, at least from my view, not before us.
If I may, Your Honor, I beg to differ. I believe that there are two different orders. We are not appealing what I will refer to as the original order. We cannot. But there is a property division which is expressed by what I will refer to as the amended order. And that property division is different than the property division which was expressed by the original order, and we're entitled to appeal that.
Is the property division expressed by the second order reflected on amended exhibit CC?
No, I don't believe that is the property division. Yes, I apologize. That is the property division which is expressed by the court in the amended order. Yes.
Saying that exhibit CC, you're therefore appealing some issue related to amended exhibit CC. Is that right?
Yeah, we are appealing several issues as it relates to the amended exhibit CC.
If amended exhibit CC differs from the original exhibit CC only in the respect that Judge Roy just pointed out, namely with respect to the things that were listed as tax refunds, what is there to appeal besides the tax refunds?
One is, please understand, the original CC is not the court's permanent orders. The original exhibit CC is a trial exhibit which was submitted by the petitioner in this case. The court also has expressed in very detailed findings, both its findings as to the valuations of specific property and specific findings as it relates to the allocation of those properties.
In the permanent orders, didn't it say that exhibit CC at the trial would be the allocation of property between the parties?
Absolutely, Your Honor. You used the word exactly correctly, which is allocation of property. It does not purport to be a valuation of any of the property in this case. And those values changed between the court's permanent orders and the amended exhibit CC. For example, if you were to take a look at the valuation of Stanish Development, the valuation of Stanish Development, as it's expressed by the trial court in its actual written findings, is a negative $500,000. The valuation of Stanish Development, as it's expressed in the original exhibit CC, is, let's call it, a negative $300,000. The valuation which is expressed in the amended exhibit CC is that same $300,000. That is a different number than what required the original clarification. And the difficulty in this case, and you can see it from the trial briefs below, is the petitioner was proceeding under the assumption that he had prevailed on these core issues, that he had prevailed as it relates to the valuation of Stanish Development, that he had prevailed as it relates to the division of the retirement accounts. The trial court expressly wrote out a division of the retirement accounts that gave each of the parties their own retirement accounts. That writing was changed ultimately as a clarification in the amended Exhibit CC. And as it's expressed, this clarification represents a different division of property than was contemplated by the court in the court's division and in the court's allocation of that property originally. And so that's why I think the crux of this case can come down to really two separate questions. The first question is, can we test the property division? Can we test the property division that's set forth?
Why isn't the question simply, wait a second, was this a clerical correction of a clerical mistake or not? Isn't that the only issue that should be presented on appeal from a 60A order?
I disagree. I think, yes, that is one of the issues that must be expressed. But because this order itself allocates and makes a substantial change in the division of property. It's not merely changing a clerical error because it's making a substantial change. And I think we have to treat that as an expression of the trial court's intent. Candidly, Judge Daly, I struggle with this one particular issue, which was the amended order expresses the court's intent, but it substantially changes the prior division. And so it's not merely the expression of a clerical error or a mathematical change. We're actually changing the substance of the underlying order.
Well, you know, or was it resolving the inconsistencies in the underlying order? And I don't know, I haven't seen the transcript that may have existed before the written order, but the permanent order seems to say that the asset allocation chart is ordered to be the allocation of assets between the parties, Exhibit CC. And if amended Exhibit CC is the same as Exhibit CC, looks to me like the same orders.
Well, one is they do differ, and they differ slightly. One of the differences in the amended CC is that the amended Exhibit CC does not carry forth the liability associated. The amended Exhibit CC does not technically value or allocate the, I'm going to call it, negative equity that's associated with Standish Development.
Did the original CC do that?
The original CC carries it as a zero. And so the amended CC carries it as a dash. I have to tell you, that's a fairly significant change. The trial court in the amended CC does not allocate that specific debt. And under the Singwald case, the failure to allocate...
Did it allocate that debt in the original order?
The original order, as expressed by the trial court, does allocate that debt.
And that didn't change in the new order?
It resolves, with all due respect, I think it does. In the original order that is written by the trial court writes out that Standish Development has a negative equity of $500,000. The exhibit which is attached, which was the petitioner's permanent orders, it was their property and debt worksheet, carries a different value for Standish Development. And then as it gets carried into the amount that's allocated to husband and the amount that's allocated to wife, it carries forth a zero. As we go forward to the amended Exhibit CC, we go now, we completely disregard the $500,000, which is Mr. Vincent's testimony, and we go to a different amount, which is Mr. Vincent's January report of about the negative $300,000, and now we don't carry that debt forward. And that debt, the failure to have an allocation of that debt is what we believe represents an error in this case. It is, under the Singwald, a failure to give attention to a debt. And absent that, you simply can't do it. In addition, there's no evidence we submit to support that. And I understand that Ms. Standish differs with that opinion. In addition, for example, I focused on Standish Development. There's also the retirement accounts. The retirement accounts, as written out by the trial court in its permanent orders, are allocated to each of the parties. In the court's final order, it's not. There's no reference to it on the amended Exhibit CC.
What do you mean by the final order? The 60B order? 60?
The 60, rule 60. The 60A order.
That's the amended CC.
That's the amended Exhibit CC. In the amended Exhibit CC, that changes so that we go from a situation where it's from each party's name to a situation where now wife is receiving the brunt of the retirement.
amended Exhibit CC with respect to those accounts is exactly the same as the original Exhibit CC. The discrepancy was between the narrative language in the order and the chart that was attached as Exhibit CC to the original order.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And then the judge followed Exhibit CC and the amended Exhibit CC. They're consistent with respect to those two accounts.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the discrepancy was just in the narrative of the original order.
I'm reluctant to say it's just in the narrative of the original order, because as a party is looking and is interpreting what that means, and it's clear in this case that the petitioner interpreted the specific words to govern over the general incorporation and the general allocation.
And who filed the Rule 59?
As I recall, husband did not file a CRCP 59 motion.
Okay. Wife filed it.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And that was not ruled upon?
That was.
And deemed denied?
By operation of law.
Okay. Now, from what I said, I'll be frank with you, I think that stops any modification of the original order, I shouldn't say stops or amending it. It precludes an appeal from that original order. Now, as I recall in reading the briefs, you talk a lot about the debts of these corporations, or the bank accounts of these corporations were awarded the wife and shouldn't have been. That was done in the original order. Whether we like it or not, we're stuck with it.
You can interpret the original order to award those accounts to wife. You may also interpret the original order to award those accounts to husband.
In the latter, you're referring to the written portion of the order that goes through and describes what he's doing.
Yeah,
you're saying that doesn't match up with CC.
That does not match up with CC.
The time to have corrected that was for you to file a 59 and get it straightened out at that point.
I understand that this case may have had a different posture on that, but White filed a 59 in part to resolve these issues. And so husband, in part, was able to rely on that. The second thing is, under the interpretation and the interpretation language we've submitted, we believe that it should be interpreted as though the trial court's written words control over the co-petitioner's exhibit which was attached. And even more importantly, as it relates to the tender of the case to this court, is the change in those written orders to the amended exhibit CC. When that change happens, when the clarification enters, when that change happens and when that clarification enters, because we have to construe it as a clarification, that is an order which we are entitled, I believe, to appeal under CRCP 60 sub A. It's not merely the discretion of granting it, to reach your point. That's one issue, is whether or not the court abused its discretion by going beyond mere clerical errors, but by really wholeheartedly changing what these issues are. But once changed, husband has to be entitled to appellate review. His day in court as to what this particularized division of property means.
Are you saying you had no incentive to appeal from permanent orders? You had no incentive to appeal the property distribution from the permanent orders?
I would urge that under husband's construction at the time, husband believed that he had prevailed on these issues of permanent orders. I would cite the court into the
system. That's reading the order itself without the exhibit.
That's reading the order itself without the exhibit and construing under the construction language the order to control. And if you look at husband's response, for example, to the Rule 59 motion, you will see him delineate the fact that he believes that he has prevailed on these issues.
So didn't the trial court say in the original order that CC is the controlling distribution?
No, it did not. What the trial court said was that Exhibit CC allocates the assets. It doesn't value the assets. And so one, as it relates to valuation issues, the court's permanent orders control on the valuation issues, and those valuation issues change between the expression as written and the amended CC. As it relates to those issues where there's a discrepancy which requires clarification between what the trial court wrote and the allocation then in CC, okay? And then there's the ultimate amendment or change of that allocation in the amended CC. That relates
to the only change I see in the CC is the allocation of the tax funds. Can you show me in the amended CC how it changes from the original CC other than
the tax funds and the zero that's present on there?
On Sanchez Development?
That is correct.
On the original CC, Standish Development has two different numbers next to it, -296, -348, and a zero in the net value column and a zero in the husband's column. And on the amended CC, those same two numbers appear, -296 and -348, without anything in the net value column or anything in the husband's column, which I assume could equally be interpreted to mean zeros. Why not?
Well, but here's my point, and it's a very specific, which is the original CC is an asset allocation. It is not findings of fact as to values. The findings of fact as to values under CRCP 52 is contained within the court's written expression. Okay? Those writings and those specific factual findings on value differ between the court's expression and the amended exhibit CC.
It's the business with the retirement accounts.
And also the retirement accounts as it relates to the business bank accounts.
Which paragraph of the original order's value of the Standish Development? I'm not sure.
I'm going to remember it roughly as 12.
Okay. I don't think so.
Which ones are the retirement accounts? Those are the Schwab accounts?
Yes, Your Honor. Let me try this. The valuation of Standish Development is contained within finding of fact number 19 on page 2. To quote, the combined businesses are valued at a combined negative investment value of $488,000 and a combined negative fair market value of $524,000. That's paragraph 19. That differs from the amended exhibit, which contains
296 and 348.
296 and 348. So there's a change in the underlying value as it relates to that. As you look at the amended, there's a dash. A failure to allocate or a failure to include a debt, even a zero, is a significant failure. And so because there are these changes between these two documents, a substantive change as to a finding of fact, we submit that we're entitled to test the second document itself.
So let me ask you this, was the Rule 60 motion just a repeat of the 59 motion, or was it different? Did it ask for different things?
I believe that the Rule 60 was filed as a Rule 60B motion, that the Rule 60B motion was generally a copy of the 59 motion. The trial court denied the 60B, saying, you guys didn't make a mistake. I made a mistake. Therefore, we're going to construe it under a 60A motion. And so as you take a look at that stream, it's fairly clear that until the trial court enters that order, everybody is operating under the assumption that this is a substantive right and that these are substantive things that we're talking about here, including the petitioner. Otherwise, given where he was at that moment with that order, he would have had and could have expressed an appeal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I wish I could reserve the balance of my time, but since it's significantly negative.
I have very few powers, but I have power over the clock. Don't worry, counsel.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Philip Kay. Bar number 38507, I represent the appellee Nancy Standish. What I'd like to do this afternoon is emphasize a few key points and address some of the points that were raised in my colleague's oral argument. Then, time permitting, I'd like to focus on some specific points regarding the issues that were set forth in the opening brief. Regarding the original CC, the original asset allocation chart, there's no dispute that that was appended to the original permanent orders.
This is it.
That is it, Your Honor.
I had a hard time figuring out which.
Yes.
That's the original CC.
Yes, Your Honor, that was the original CC.
And then the other one says amended CC at the top. And
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly right. Now, as was established a few minutes ago, the amended CC and the original CC were identical except for a few minor differences. Regarding the tax refunds, that was one of the differences. Regarding a dash or a zero, Your Honor, I submit that as a non-starter. If you look at the ultimate values as set, as calculated by the court, because the court gives a final value, the dash has to be a zero. It's got to be, because otherwise the valuation wouldn't make any sense. And so the trial court, should he put a zero instead of a dash? Maybe. But clearly he was intending a zero, because that's the only way that the sum total adds up. Regarding whether the original CC was merely an allocation as opposed to valuation, Your Honor, I again submit that's a non-starter. It doesn't make any sense to allocate unless you're allocating based on certain values. If you've got a $100 valuation and you allocate $75 to the husband and $25 to the wife, whether you call it an allocation or a valuation, $75 plus $25 equals $100. That's the only possible valuation the court could have intended, because he's allocating specific values. He's not just saying the retirement account goes to wife. He's giving a dollar amount when he's allocating that, and the dollar amount has to equal the value. Otherwise, there's unallocated assets. The court was correct. We filed a Rule 59 motion that was deemed denied. Then we filed a 60B motion. The court ultimately didn't have jurisdiction over that, the original 60 motion, because we had our time for appeal was coming up, so we appealed. And so ultimately the issue went back on limited remand to the trial court, and the trial court clarified what its original intent was, which was original CC, that's what I meant. The fact that I had other things in the body of other valuations and allocations in the body of my findings of fact, the court saying I didn't mean to do that. That was a mistake. Very similar to the Buck case. It's true that in Buck there was only one account that was at issue. In this case, there's more than one. But the fact that there was only one issue, or excuse me, one account at issue in the Buck case, that wasn't dispositive to the Buck courts.
Was the original order, did the judge in the original order talk out of both sides of his mouth in Buck?
Yes, he did, Your Honor. What happened in Buck was the judge awarded the same bank account to both parties. Clearly, the same bank account could not be awarded to both parties. So what the judge did was came back and said, I meant to award it to the wife. Therefore, I'm clarifying my original intent. It's the same exact thing that happened here. Regardless whether there's one account or 20 accounts, the judge is coming back saying, yes, I made a mistake, and I'm clarifying my original order. The trial court is not bound by ordinary rules of statutory construction when it's clarifying its own orders. The trial court is not bound by ordinary rules of contract construction.
Can I ask you one more question about the Buck case?
Yes, Your Honor.
When he clarified it consistent with his original intent, did he have a oral ruling to say, well, I ruled that way, I just made a mistake in my written ruling, so therefore I'm going to make it consistent with my oral ruling?
To my recollection, the answer is no. There was no mention one way or the other whether there was an oral ruling. The only ruling that the Buck court addressed was the actual written findings, the written judgment. Just getting back to contract construction, the trial court is not bound by ordinary rules of contract construction when it construes its own orders. Rule 68 is clear. If the court makes a clerical mistake, it may go back and correct it, regardless of ordinary rules of statutory or contract construction. It's critical to understand, I believe, why there was different valuations in the joint experts' January report, which was ultimately adopted by the court in both the original CC and the amended CC, not in the body of the findings of fact. That's true. In the CCs, the court adopted it. Why is there a difference between the businesses that were valued a mere 4 or 5 months apart? There was a drastic reduction in the later report that the husband is relying on. The reason is...
After the final orders were entered based upon valuations, there was a subsequent valuation?
Oh, no, Your Honor. Let me clarify. The trial of this matter was held in July of 2010. There was a valuation in January 2010 of the husband's businesses. There was a
another valuation shortly prior to trial in June of 2010 that revalued the husband's businesses, and there was a drastic reduction in the value of the businesses in the June valuation than January. Why was there such a drastic reduction? The husband is arguing that that reduction, the June report, that's what the court should have adopted. But what came out in the transcript, and we address this in our answer brief, is that the valuation methodology changed. In the January report, the expert valued the businesses based on a 3.5-year marketing period, which is the standard marketing period. In the June report, unbeknownst to us, he revalued those businesses using a 1-year marketing period. And what that resulted in, as the trial testimony bore out, was a what the judge or what the expert or what one of the attorneys called fire sale prices. It was the rock bottom valuation for these businesses. It's not correct. The reason I bring that up is it's not correct to say that since the June valuations were closer to the trial date, they're more accurate. That's not the case at all. In fact, the January valuations not only included the debt, but included more debt because the debt had consistently been paid down over those 5 months. The only reason for the difference in the valuation was the valuation methodology. The market did not suffer a crash between January 2010 to June 2010. So to say that the June expert report is more accurate, it's just not the case. Valuation methodology changed drastically. And the court did admit that exhibit, but it never said it was going to be bound by the June valuations. It said it would admit it, keeping in mind that it was submitted late. But even if the court didn't say that, the court's not bound by any expert's valuations. The court has to take it under advisement and base its valuations on some evidence in the record. And ultimately, the court did.
Are you saying that paragraph 19 is based on the latter of the business valuations?
Judge, are we talking about valuation 19 and the original findings of fact?
Yes. It seems to have a discrepancy between its numbers and Exhibit CC that Mr. Bailey pointed out.
Yes.
That's the later one, June one.
That's exactly right.
Whereas the exhibit shows the January one.
Exactly.
Right? And it's only Standish Development that seems to have this discrepancy, right? There's the other businesses as well.
Other businesses as well, because what you'll see from paragraph 19 is the combined businesses are valued at this number. In Exhibit C, I'm sorry.
That may explain why the number for Standish is different on Exhibit CC. Do we have to add them all up? Is that what we have to do to get that number?
I believe you would need to add them up according to the June report to get to the numbers that are in paragraph 19.
What's the significance? He gave the business to the husband, whatever the value was he gave them. Is that value deducted from other assets that are given to him to get his net value?
Well, that's one of the key points. The answer is no, and here's why.
It seems like
there's a legal dispute amongst the parties and amongst various states. The question is, can a marital asset have a negative valuation below zero valuation? Some courts say yes, some say no. The majority rule is no. You cannot go below zero when valuing a marital asset. The husband's going to argue there's a case out of Missouri, there's a case out of Alaska. It's true, there's a minority position, but the majority rule is that marital asset cannot have anything lower than a zero value. There's no case in Colorado that I found.
When Judge Russell did this, and he concluded that there was negative value, certainly in Standish Development, he didn't put negative on the husband's column. He put zero in the husband's column, right?
That's
he adopted
exactly right.
What you would call, I guess, is the majority rule, right?
That's right.
And that legal issue was known to them when he filed his orders in, I guess, July of 2010, right?
Yes.
And it was not appealed from.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
But I want to make another point regarding that. The court didn't just rely on a majority rule. There was testimony from Mr. Vincent, trial testimony, where under cross-examination, he conceded that a zero valuation is a viable alternative to a negative valuation. I understand Mr. Vincent's not a lawyer. He was not expressing a legal opinion, but he was expressing the economic opinion that that's a viable option. So when the court adopted that option that Mr. Vincent stated was a viable option, it cannot be said that the court's valuation of Standish Development, the net value of zero, is against the weight of the evidence. The court had his testimony saying that that was a viable valuation. If we look at the amended CC.
Let me hear you briefly on the jurisdictional issue.
Your Honor, since the original permit orders were not appealed by the husband, only the Rule 60 order was appealed by the husband. Under Buck, the husband, and by the way, Buck is consistent with federal jurisdiction, with every other state case I found. I found no contrary authority, and I don't believe husband did either because we would have seen it. He may only appeal the Rule 60 order, not anything else, not maintenance, not child support, not the award of attorney's fees, only the orders that are contained in that Rule 60, the Rule 60A order. Those issues are fair game, and husband is appealing those, but he's also trying to, under issue number 5, ask that the court clarify or overrule the Buck case to permit him to go back and attack the entirety of the permanent orders based on what he calls a violation of his substantial rights. The Buck case is clear regarding what can be appealed. This court respectfully does not have jurisdiction to hear any argument on any issue other than what is contained in that Rule 60 order. There's simply no jurisdiction for
it. And what from that is he appealing?
He's appealing, well, that's a good question, Your Honor, perhaps better posed to opposing counsel. The way I read his brief, he is appealing the award of the business accounts to the wife. He's appealing the award of the retirement accounts to the wife, and he's challenging the court's valuation of the businesses. It's important to understand that all of those things occurred in the original CC. The award of the business accounts to the wife, the business bank accounts, that was in the original CC. It wasn't in the body, we can see that. It wasn't in the body of permanent orders, but it certainly was in the exhibit CC that the courts specifically say it was a fair and reasonable allocation, and in order number 12 stated that that would be the court's allocation. So the way I view his appeal, he's appealing those three issues in the Rule 60 order first, and then second, he's asking the court to allow him to go back and also appeal issues that were not contained in the Rule 60 order, such as maintenance, attorney's fees, and child support.
Not appealing from the reallocation of the tax refunds or the tax credits.
That's right. That actually went in his favor, Your Honor, and we didn't appeal that issue.
On the Rule 60, it went in his favor.
Yes, on that issue.
Okay.
That went, I believe that went in his favor, and the parties that that's no longer in dispute. That's not an issue for this for today.
Good.
I want to address briefly the Singwald case. My colleague brought up the Singwald case and argued that the court is required under Colorado law to consider debt in its allocation. And I want to make very clear that all the Singwald case said was the court has to consider the debt. It never said you get to have a negative valuation. Singwald is not in conflict with the majority rule. Let's understand what husband is indebted for, because I believe opposing counsel is stating that the court failed to consider and allocate that debt. He's a guarantor on commercial loans that are secured by real estate. The only way he is ever personally liable on those guarantees is if two things happen. Number one, there's a default. No evidence that there's ever been a default. Number two, following default, there's a foreclosure. And the foreclosure bid or foreclosure sale amount is lower than the value of the loan, then there's a deficiency. Then husband can be sued on those guarantees. Only if those two things happen is he ever going to be liable on those guarantees. And there was no evidence that any of those things were going to occur. And so the court didn't have to do anything further than what it did by adopting Mr. Vincent's January report, which, by the way, did consider the husband's debt in its ultimate valuation of the husband's businesses. Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, I'll give you a couple, 3 minutes if you want to respond to that. I realize we took up your entire time.
Well, we are here for the court.
With questions on the jurisdiction.
I will be brief, Your Honor. One is, at its core, we absolutely disagree as to what relates to the majority rule for debt and the non-majority rule for debt. There is a clear distinction. debt which is recourse is factored in by the court. Colorado case law, it's expressed in the briefs, clearly shows that, and that includes case law on guarantees. So to say that debt or negative equity isn't considered would be to wipe out credit card debt. It would be to wipe out upside down cars. There's a ton of different circumstances.
So when the judge puts zero on exhibit C, why?
I cannot identify why my client didn't appeal it. For example, one thing is this.
Would he have?
He could have appealed
but
it.
But he didn't.
But he was also allocated sufficient assets so that at that time he was satisfied with the court's order. Because the written expression gave him, for example, all the bank accounts, gave him the retirement accounts.
Exhibit CC didn't give it to him. And the bottom line on Exhibit CC, an amended Exhibit CC for your client barely changed.
I agree with you that there's a bare change, but there's a very different thing between the written expression of intent and the co-petitioner's Exhibit CC, which is an exhibit. That's why there's a difference in the valuation issues. It's not that the court changed its mind. The court adopted the testimony of the expert. It's the expert who testified as to the June numbers. The court adopted that in a writing which expressed it. Their trial exhibit obviously had a different value for that. And so when the court adopts their trial exhibit as an allocation and not a valuation, that's why we say that there's the difference there. We're also specifically saying that there are differences here. Even the co-petitioner recognizes that the businesses are valued differently, that the allocation of the retirement funds is valued and handled.
When you say differently, you mean they're valued in accordance with the January appraisal instead of the June appraisal.
I'm sorry, when I say differently, I'm saying that the written expression of the court's intent in its permanent orders of July is different than the amended Exhibit CC.
How about the original Exhibit CC?
The original Exhibit CC and the amended Exhibit CC are the same on those issues. I absolutely believe that we are correct when we say that the differences between the two are relatively nominal. But what I'm trying to express here is that when the expression from the court itself is one thing, where the court writes it out, and then when the expression is the adoption of a party's exhibit, that the court is not bound by rules of contractual construction. The court is not bound by common law rules of construction, but we are. And candidly, if you were looking at that order and trying to resolve it from this court, how would you resolve those ambiguities? Would you resolve those ambiguities as it relates to the word or the adoption of the CC, or would you resolve those ambiguities as it relates to the court's written expression of its intent?
Bottom of the original CC, husband was given $506,294 of the marital assets, right? And of that number, it could not possibly have included these three accounts. Anybody reading it would see that. Isn't that right? And if he didn't like that, he could have appealed it at that time. Tell me why I'm wrong, sir.
Because Exhibit CC was not a property allocation. The Exhibit CC on
Joe said Exhibit CC is a fair and equitable allocation of the property. Isn't that the very final finding he made?
And the court did say that. The court also specifically allocated those accounts differently.
Exhibit CC, it didn't.
No, Exhibit CC is Exhibit CC, but when the court writes down what it's doing, it express. I won't beat the dead horse. I think I've gone down that.
Jen, you're out of time. We want to thank you both. We understand, particularly from the appellant's point of view, that the argument was not got truncated early, and I somewhat apologize for that, but we had to let you know what our thinking was and the issue that has come up in our own thinking, and we wanted to be able to respond to that. So that's why it went the way it did. And to that extent, I apologize, but I think it was necessary. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.